It's Mike Michalowicz here, and I am so thrilled that Get Different has been a tremendous success. I am humbled and honored all at once, and it's because of the Go-Getters. So I encourage you to check them out and see if their businesses may be able to serve you. A huge thank you goes to Stephanie Scheller of GrowDisrupt.com, Ashley Berghoff of A2OnlineSquared.com, Lisa Young of LisaRobinYoung.com. That's with two B's for Robin. Andrea Ballure of StudioLinear.com. Eric Olmsted of OnlineSupport.com. It's on-line-support.com. And finally, Michael Bazinski of BuzzBiz.biz. Thank you, Go-Getters. Thank you for your tremendous support.
I can basically tell you 85% of all tax strategies happen the year it's actually happening. And if you don't put those things in place, I'm sorry to tell you, I'm very good at my job, sir, but I'm not a magician.
Yeah.
Like I can't like turn the clock back that far. Like there's something magical about December 31st. So, you know, it is what it is.
You ever see how often Kelsey and I get into disagreements?
Yes, it's lovely. It's so enjoyable. It's so, so enjoyable. It's your banter. It's just divine.
It is our banter. I get so angry at her. Was it our retreat, our most recent retreat? It just, my God, we're going at it over something stupid. I don't know. And Kelsey was right. That's the problem.
She's always right, Mike.
No, she,
I will say,
well, I would say always, but I'd say like 90%. Was 90% of the time, she's correct. All right. Let's kick into the episode and we'll have a little discussion
Spark
afterwards.
Spark File.
Pardon me?
The podcast was called The Spark File.
Spark File. Okay. Really good show. Really good show. So I invite everyone to check out their program in its entirety. I have not yet listened to other episodes, but I feel compelled to. So Minnie Lau. Okay. So Minnie Lau came on. She is a first professional. She has just a really cool story about her transition from kind of routine traditional work to work where she can dictate a huge premium, and did it through niche focus using pumpkin plan strategies. You'll learn it all, and then we'll talk about it afterwards. So listen on in. All right. So listen, you know this. You're a tax advisor. You provide tax services. You're an accountant. I'm curious about your application of the pumpkin plan. And why don't you give me a little bit of a before and after, like a real summary version of that. And then I want to ask you questions about how you did it.
Okay, cool. So once upon a time, started my tax practice, was pretty much a generalist. So I serviced a lot of small business owners. I serviced a bunch of folks with real estate. I serviced a bunch of folks with, you know, all sorts of backgrounds in life, you know, a house, two W-2s, you know, that kind of thing. And then I realized that I really hate filing tax returns. And I know that sounds really like counterintuitive. I'm a tax CPA after all. I should be loving these tax returns.
Yeah.
But what I really, really enjoyed doing was working with my clients the other 9 months of the year, doing stuff, forecasting for the future, rather than reporting on what happened in the past.
Interesting.
And so reading your book, working with Geraldine, my business coach, kind of got me into the whole, hey, you know, rather than doing what most of my brethren are already doing, which is, you know, give the tax return, let me take a step back and say, hey, I'm going to focus on being the girl to help you forecast the future. And then as an unfortunate byproduct, I will also file your taxes.
I hope you don't say, as an unfortunate byproduct, I hope you don't say
it. It actually says so on my website. Like,
no.
It says, will you file my tax returns? I actually say, yes, we do offer it in-house for a fee, but if you want to do it yourself, who doesn't love TurboTax, or if you already have a tax CPA you absolutely adore, don't fire him on my account, because there is room for all of us to happily coexist.
Okay. So doesn't the generic client, I'm looking for someone, I find you many, I'm like, oh, you know, I need my taxes done. Isn't the generic client looking at taxes and then the planning is the afterthought? That's the unfortunate consequence?
Well, I think that's what we're programmed to believe.
Oh, that, interesting.
You know, it's like the tail that wags the dog kind of thing is we're kind of like, oh, we have to file taxes. And then we plan around that. But the reality, if you take a moment and think about it, is we're always filing taxes for the year that already happened. Where should
right, it's very looking back, right?
Yeah. So whereas I can basically tell you 85% of all tax strategies happen the year it's actually happening. And if you don't put those things in place, I'm sorry to tell you, I'm very good at my job, sir, but I'm not a magician.
Yeah.
Like I can't like turn the clock back that far. Like there's something magical about December 31st. So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. So I'm sure that's what customers want. So customers, you're doing their taxes from the prior year. It's now in the new year and they're like, I'm getting screwed. You got to fix this. There's a shoot the messenger response too. But what I'm hearing from you is the greater opportunity for the customer, for us, is, you know, when you're in the midst of say 2022, you should be actively planning for 2022. So let me ask you this, does tax law change? Meaning like the tax law exists for 2022, when it becomes 2023, can they change the law for 2022 or it basically stays the same?
It depends. It depends is the two most useful words in my occupation. This is how we fight job recessions. This is how we make sure that we cannot get fired. The answer to all tax questions, Mike, is it depends. Now, but to answer the real question is politics. Did not warn you about me? Okay, so long and short of it is the politicians sometimes draft laws that are retroactive. Sometimes they draft laws that, you know, will kick in on January 1. So you really should always have your pulse on what is potentially happening down the pipeline. So whenever I work with my clients, I give them the version A. If the tax law doesn't change, this is how you're hosed. And then here is plan B. If the plan kicks in,
interesting.
This is the second variation of how you're hosed. Okay, sorry, that was just really, really dark. So let's try that all over again.
There's no editing, no nothing. So the double hosing.
It is what it is, yes.
So, okay. So now you realize, you know, that you have a love for forecasting, you have a dislike or hate for filing taxes. That's great for you. But how do you find the customers who care about that? And is it your existing customers who care about that?
Well, it just so happens that I am happily located in the San Francisco Bay Area, home of a whole bunch of emerging startups. Yeah. And so the clientele that I primarily service are early to, you know, mid-level employees of, you know, companies like, you know, Coinbase and Airbnb and DoorDash and you name it, you know, I've got them. And so a lot of my clients, by the time they come to me, know that, hey, Minnie is a stock compensation girl. This is something that she specializes her practice in. And what I help my clients do is look at the stock package they've been given, see what we can do to optimize it, and help them execute the plan so that when tax time comes, it's a matter of, yeah, we already forecasted this 9 months ago. Yeah, I have the money. Or, you know, we already know that this is the plan. And, oh, look, the stock price just went up by $100. Everybody just high fives each other. And then maybe sometimes if I'm lucky, I get a nice bottle of wine. So, you know, it's a matter of I take away the stress of the unknown by planning for what we do know.
Okay. So you threw another variable in here. You do stock compensation. Is that what you said?
Yes, I am a stock option compensation girl. In my neck of the woods, there are a lot of folks that work for tech companies where the significant portion of their compensation is equity based rather than, you know, cash per paycheck. Yeah. And what I assist my clients in, what my sweet spot actually is to contact with folks that work for companies that are pre-IPO stage. Their sweet spot usually is around 6 months to 18 months before they announce IPO. And, you know, by the time everybody hears it on the news is the company has confidentially filed their S1.
Yeah, it's no longer confidential.
Like,
yeah.
It's no longer like, look, the people in those companies know that the thing was going to happen and they reach out to lovely people like me and we basically help them maneuver themselves into the strongest position that they can. Ideally, if they have stock options in their compensation, for them to potentially exercise what they should exercise on the front end rather than the back end. It's a lot cheaper to exercise something when the fair market value is $20 versus $300 after it's publicly traded.
Oh, that's interesting. So, okay. So it sounds like you have really refined down your offering. Before, it sounds like you're doing filing tax returns for individuals and corporations. Is that true?
Yes, sir. I did the gamut of everything.
All right. So then you get this really interesting niche, this stock option compensation, particularly when they're months out before the IPO. So you can help these companies in strategizing that. How do you refine to such a specific niche? And when you do, what's the rewards for you? Like, what's the benefit of you being so focused?
Well, I read your book, big fan.
That's a reward for me.
At a certain point, I do want to send you a copy of my book so you can sign it and send it back to me.
But that's neither here. We'll do it.
All right, that's totally. Okay, but to answer your question is, I realize that there are so many CPAs out there that can do the type of work that I do, but they do not market themselves out as an authority on what it is that I do. Okay. And furthermore, I am very privileged that when I started my practice, it was circa 2013. This was very shortly after Facebook went public. And as a result, a lot of my early clients were alumni of Facebook who then ended up going to the Airbnbs and the Ubers and the Lyfts of the world. And they kind of spread around. With joining these nascent companies, they received very generous stock option packages. And as a result, I've been working behind the scenes with these people filing their tax returns with planning on the side for years. And so I woke up one day and decided, why am I doing it this way? The real material value of my service is not the tax return, it's the planning that goes with the tax return. So why not just own this is the thing that differentiates me from my peers and just say, I'm a stock option planning girl, and I will also file your tax returns on the side rather than go the other way.
The other way. This is really intriguing. Let me make sure I understand the customer a little bit better. So the customer isn't necessarily Facebook, the company, it's the individuals who work for Facebook under a stock option comp plan as their primary revenue source, right?
Yes, sir, that is correct. I do not work with the companies. I mean, I do work with some companies, but definitely not Facebook. Absolutely not. Wouldn't that be nice? I service the early employees of those companies.
And I assume that's a pretty small community. I mean, because I presume that employee is taking on massive risk. They're betting that this company will be successful. And in the meantime, before the IPO, they gotta pay for bed and bread, you know, the bread and butter with their own dollars. They're not getting the cash in. So I presume this isn't what every employee wants to pursue. Is that true?
Well, people who look me up, this is what they want to pursue. I'm
the
people
who look you up, yeah.
Yes, but here's the thing too, is I randomly have prospective client calls with people that aren't sure they can afford to pull the trigger. Okay. And within a 30-minute conversation, I can tell them definitively, hey, you can pull this trigger and I can show you three different ways to do it and you're not going to lose your shirt.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Or in maybe there's some cases too where you shouldn't do it. So you can see it too.
Absolutely. There are a number of scenarios where it's kind of like, hey, dude, you're really, really close to your IPO time frame. You don't have the cash in your pocket. You're not willing to, you know, borrow, steal, or barter to raise the funds to do this. I mean, if it's 2 weeks out, you might as well just sit still and look pretty.
Yeah.
I mean, and those are my exact words, actually.
I love the way you communicate. You should just sit still and look pretty. I do the unfortunate task of doing your tax returns. I love your marketing. It's so definitive. And talking about definitive, you said something that really triggered with me. I wrote it down. You said a lot of people could do what you're doing, but almost no one markets themselves as the authority in doing this. So the ability to do and how you position yourself as an authority sound like two different things. How did you make yourself an authority?
Because I went through the thought exercise of what I was actually good at, along with what I enjoyed doing. And I realized when I actually try to put in stock option compensation planning on Google, it's like a giant vacuum of like, there's nothing there. Mm. And then I realized I've been doing this now for over a decade. If that doesn't make me an authority in something, I'm not quite sure what does. I'm sorry. Maybe it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I hold myself out as an expert, and there just happens to be a couple of really nice people to basically, you know what? She's not, you know, an idiot. And then so the whole thing just kind of works itself out, and connects to like. And more importantly, I'm extremely grateful and, you know, thankful that my clients are now the prominent folks that have cashed in their millions. Multiples of millions, you know, tens of millions of millions. And then they basically said, hey, Minnie, help me with this. And then they talked to their friends and family and their colleagues and their subordinates. And next thing I know, I've got a 3-month wait list and life is pretty good.
Oh, wow. So this is what I'm super interested in. It sounds like the majority of your marketing comes from successful customers.
Yes, I'm really, really lucky in that. I don't spend money on marketing, not in the traditional sense. I don't Facebook, I don't LinkedIn, yeah. I don't anything. I just try to provide good service to the people that I have the privilege of servicing, and that seems to take care of it.
I was last week interviewing John Jantz. He's an author. My favorite book he wrote is called Duct Tape Marketing. We wrote a new book called The Ultimate Marketing Engine. And interestingly, he said in the opening of the book, he says the ultimate marketing engine is a successful customer. Your reputation. And that's what I'm hearing. What has this resulted in regards to numbers for you? You had an hourly rate before. Do you have a different hourly rate now? How's that all work?
I try very hard not to have an hourly rate, because hourly rate gives the client the impression I can be bought by the hour. And that is no longer the case. Yeah. If I were to put a number to it, pre this mini version one, which is the old mini way of one. Doing things.
The Mini Cooper one.
Yes, Mini Cooper one, classic, love it.
Beautiful.
Yes, beautiful. But I'm also sorry to say there are tens of thousands of them out there, which is
tens
also
of thousands,
great. Yeah, which is great. I was billing around $300-$350 an hour. I mean, if I was doing more niche specific things, probably the $350. If I was just doing like generic tax return churn, $300. Okay. But now when I take on a client, our price of working together begins at around $7,500.
And what does that, can you translate that back to hourly?
I try very hard not to put a specific number of hours to it, just because everybody's situation is a little bit different.
Of course.
I'll range it somewhere between 7 to 10 hours.
Okay. So that's somewhere between $700 to $1,000 an hour. So you've more than doubled the return on your effort per hour. Roughly.
Sure, if you really want to encapsulate that. But I think the more important takeaway for me is I'm now doing the things I really, really like to do more than just farming tax returns.
Yeah, you do more. And so you like what you're doing more. It also sounds like you generate a lot more revenue per client.
I do.
Yeah, so your prior clients that you're doing those tax returns for $250 or $300, $350 an hour, what would those clients yield on an annual basis typically?
About $1,500 to grand. Yeah.
So. All right. There you go. So $1,500 versus an opening project for $7,500, a year's project for $1,500. The opening event is $7,500. And I assume some of these clients engage you beyond just that.
Oh yeah. I tell a lot of my clients that we do the flat rate part because they need to get to know me and I need to get to know them. And people function a lot better when they're not constantly staring at the clock. But once we're once we pass that original 1 year engagement, I will convert back to an hourly if it makes sense. And to be fair, most of my clients within that 12-month window have already had their liquidity. Like the company has gone IPO at that point, or they've exercised everything they need to do. Like most of the heavy lifting would have happened during those 12 months, in which case then how we continue along the lines, they can already see what value I have brought to the table. And at that point, I just basically name my price and they usually just say, okay, yeah, cool. Just go with it. It's all good.
I love it. Have you explored, and does it make sense? Is it legal to do like a success fee? Saying, listen, I have a strategy that will optimize your income, will prepare dynamically, will prepare proactively for the dynamics that happen. I take 1% of the top line. I mean, have you considered that? Does stuff like that exist? Is that a good move?
I believe the California Board of Certified Accountants kind of frown on that
that makes model. Sense, right? Sounds like being at odds with tax law.
Yeah, but you know, I know that financial advisors sometimes do generate off of that model. But as a CPA, I have a fiduciary duty to my clients, and I like the fact that hey, I have no other people that I'm beholden to. You're the only person. That right. I'm making my money off of you, and this is how much I'm making off of you. So there's no misunderstandings of any kind here. So because some of the strategies I request my clients put into play do involve intermediaries. We need some estate planner sometimes, we need some financial advisor sometimes, and I'm always very, very transparent that, hey, all of these other people I'm introducing to you, number one, you request I make these introductions. And number two, I don't get kickbacks of any kind. So you do your own due diligence on like how you put your plan together. I'm just your friend slash mentor slash advisor on the side here to help you, you know, guide you. I'm like a Sherpa and my client's going up Everest.
I love it. I love it. Tell me about the transition for clients. So perhaps you had some clients that were just doing the tax stuff, Minnie, and now you're like, well, this is where I'm moving to. Do you fire those clients? Do you let them fade out? How do you handle the transition between that generalist approach to the focus you have now?
Well, I have three groups of clients that I actually went through that very, it was painful, man. I'll just preface it as it was blood, sweat, and tears. After all, you don't build a practice from one day and says, bye-bye, I'm making too much money now, so I don't want to service you anymore. And you never want to end it like that. But there was literally three groups of my clients. The first group would be like, these were the people that if they found me today, they yeah. would be employing my plan. So for those folks, I'm like, look, dude, happy days are gone now. I'm not giving this stuff away for free anymore. So here's the new programming. New people pay this, you pay this, which is a grandfathered in price. And we just continue to chug along as we always do. And because group number one realized how much their friends, their new friends that they're referring me are paying, they're like, oh, well, I'm still getting a really, really good discount. So group number one was okay. Group number two were the people that were like, hey, I could use this, but I don't have my payday right now. And I just have a really, really frank conversation is, I'm sorry, I need work-life balance. I've got a 2-year-old at home. And so this is the new model. I've got some really, really awesome friends. They would love to take you as clients for similar fees that I'm charging you. And I will be around for the transition. So that's group number two. Mm-hmm. And group number three are people in group number one that wants to not change anything. I just basically say, you know, respectfully, I'm no longer filing tax returns as the primary source of my income anymore. So, you know, make up your mind. And if not, you know, good luck to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And those are like weird conversations to have, but
yeah, I'm sure they are.
Yeah. And they also,
but very integral.
I've been called extortionists. I've been called, you're like, you.
That was me. That was me. Face. You wanted to get on the show. I'm like, you're an extortionist, Minnie. You're an extortionist.
I have a bottleneck. Unfortunately, human cloning and freezing of time hasn't developed as well as I had hoped. Yeah. And therefore there are so many IPOs and specs that are out there. And I am sorry to say, I only have a select few slots available. And you know, the fact of the matter is, who wants it more?
Yeah, that's the truth. It's integral. I'm curious about the work demand on you. Now you got rid of those other types of projects. You're taking on this new stock option comp positioning. Are you working more? Are you working less?
I work more and less at the same time.
That sounds contradictory.
Okay. During the
That's
month
tricky.
Of, yeah, during the months of February, March, and April, I now work significantly less because I've now disengaged the bulk of my tax return.
Totally. Yep.
So in a way I work less, but in my mind, as I'm doing grocery shopping, I'm working more.
Oh, so you're thinking, you're processing, you're coming up with ideas.
I'm constantly thinking about things because it's no longer confined to February, March, and April. This is no longer a transaction. This is a team effort. So I'm going grocery shopping and I'm like, you know what? The price of DoorDash looks good today. I should call this person, this person, this person, this person, and schedule a meeting with their financial advisor and see if we should exercise, you know, before the window closes. So in a way, I work less, but I work more because I now have more bandwidth to service my chosen few.
I can see you walking through like the shopping aisle. You just put your arm out and knocking like 50 bags of coffee as you're just thinking. You ever buy something like, what the hell did I just buy because of that?
I'm kind of embarrassed, but yes.
What'd you buy?
coffee.
60 pounds of Oreo cookies?
Coffee. Well, and
you know, it was a coffee.
It was literally coffee. And you know, the funny thing is, you're not going to believe me when I say this. I don't drink coffee.
Now, that makes it a good story. Hey,
but my partner does. And he consumes a large amount of coffee. And so when I do the grocery run, I pick up coffee.
He's never had so much coffee in his life. Hey, no. I'm curious about surge demand for you. I presume if DoorDash, for example, is approaching IPO, they're bringing on new employees, they're in that sweet spot of 6 to 18 months out, you probably get a lot of phone calls then, as opposed to when DoorDash is 24 or 36 months out. Do you get surge demand, and does that mess up with your schedule?
I do, and I tell myself first come, first serve. I don't do surge pricing. I am not an Uber.
Oh, okay. I love it. I love it, because Uber does that, and it did it to me last night, literally last night. A normal price more than doubled. And I bought it, and I was just cursing. I was like, Minnie wouldn't have accepted this.
No, Minnie.
She would have bought more coffee.
Yes, Minnie raises her fees once a year, you know, depending on, you know, what supply and demand actually is. But I would not purposefully increase my fees right before Robinhood going IPO per se.
We got to split in a second. I'm just curious. One last question is, with this niche and increasing prices, my logic is if you niche down even further, I just do, stock option compensation for C-suite employees or something. Like, is there a further refinement, or are you in the sweet spot? When do you know you're in the exact spot you want to be in?
I think it's a work in progress, sir.
Okay,
like, but I felt like I've already niched down, and now the new frontier is cryptocurrency. So that is the next iteration of my practice. And I'm now taking a lot of clients that work for cryptocurrency companies, where instead of restricted stock units, they get tokens. So, hey, it's Wild Wild West out there.
Oh my God, I love it. Minnie, this has been a fun interview. Thanks just for the raw energy. Where can our listeners, if they want to learn more about what you're doing, where's the site to go to? Where's the place they go?
It's very obnoxious. The website is minnielau.com.
That's easy. MINNIELAU.com.
Yes, that's exactly it. I should have thought about this when I was branding, but you know, we are where we are.
Well, maybe you can do Mini Cooper 2.0. If Mini Cooper 1.0 is taken, maybe you can do Mini Cooper 2.0.com. I don't know.
That would seem kind of fun. Thank you.
Yeah. You're very welcome for that lousy advice. all right, Minnie, thank you so much for joining me. It was a pleasure talking with you.
It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
First of all, I did not expect that kind of energy, like at all.
That was my first comment, was like, wow, I know I sound like somebody's grandmother, but she's quite a little spitfire, isn't she?
Spitfire, she's just, and a little jibs and jabs on the side.
Yes, she's, and her energy was like, whew, she's great energy.
So what I like about the podcast is we do them like, you know, live tape, but there's no preamble. I showed you go on like, oh, for the first like 10 minutes, let's talk about what we're going to talk about and blah, blah, blah. This one, like, hey, what's up? She's like,
she came out.
And just came out. It was just amazing. I loved the focus on, I didn't even know something existed. How to make, you know, a compensation, how to position your compensation on shares or option shares and to strategize around that.
Yeah. I have to say, I was swimming a little bit.
What?
I said, I have to say, I was swimming a little bit at that point.
I was swimming too.
Like, whoa, what? Wait, yeah. What do you do?
But the fact that you can make, she can make a career out of this, like, and of course you'll have an extraordinary reputation. Who else does that?
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think?
Her rates went up to, I mean, I guess she gave us an equivalent, but like $1,000 an hour or something. It's like a brain surgeon.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I liked when she said, you know, for the plan, it depends. That was her go-to phrase, was, well, it depends, because, you know, like when she was specifically talking about tax law, obviously things change and they either implement things right before taxes start getting filed, or sometimes they do it late and approve things after the fact. So she said, you know, we come up with a plan A and then we have a plan B, and then it's, you know, we decide. So it all depends on, you know, the situation at the time.
I think the viral effect too of the marketing that's just implied, the fact that she worked with someone at Facebook going through this, opens the door to all the employees at Facebook that have this in front of her, mm-hmm. in front of them. And yeah. She, Kels, could you stop fixing your hair? You're the most distracting. Just because you're not recording doesn't mean you're not part of the show.
I'm not here.
Yeah, but all you're doing, like, we know you're staring at yourself fixing your hair, but for God's
sake. Oh, God.
I can't concentrate.
When I was on, my hair was fixed.
You know what's funny is Kelsey will find a way to insert herself in the show even when we squelch her. Like, we're like, no talking. And somehow
nobody invited me to be here today.
Exactly.
My God.
People gotta hear me one more time.
I invited you. I said,
stay. Jeremy invited her. I'm so glad.
And her eyebrows are so nice, she doesn't need a filter.
Oh, exactly.
The positive. That's a good thing.
You know what's cool? Yeah, when she said, a lot of people could do what I do, but no one positions themselves as the authority. So I just said, hey, yeah, I'm the authority. It. Yeah.
I'm in.
She was so impressive. She was so sharp and just like, she's a constant motion kind of person.
Yeah.
They always fascinate me because I'm so not a constant motion kind of person. So I'm always like, ooh, look at him go.
Yeah. She had a lot of energy.
Yeah.
I mean, what I think I recall now, reflecting on this, it's not like her work hours have dropped significantly. It sounds like she's a working machine. And I don't know if that is necessarily healthy for all of us. But
she's choosing the work she does in a more choosing.
Yeah, that's yeah. it. And yeah. so therefore her per hour return is massive now because of her focus on that niche.
Yeah. And her ability to pumpkin plan her business is just amazing. The fact that she's really, you know, cultivated exactly the business she wants to have. And it's no longer, what was it that she hated? Tax returns. She was like, yes, unfortunately I do tax returns. Unfortunately.
Yeah. What was it? Yeah. Unfortunately, I do tax returns. That's her marketing position. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Unfortunately, I do tax returns.
Yeah. And I hate it. And I, you know, but I'm not doing it so much anymore. So good for her.
Which, you know, points to, if you're really good at one thing, you can even say bold statements like that to a client. It's like, I need my taxes done. You're like, yeah, unfortunately, I do them and I hate them.
Yeah.
Like, and clients are still like, oh, okay, I write $1,000 check for an hour with you.
Yeah.
So if you're so good at one thing, I think it offsets the others. Sloan, anything else you wanted to share?
No. That's it.
We got a trivia game to play.
We do.
Woo-hoo.
So she said in her bio that she likes to do baking. So this is a baking quiz.
All right.
All you bakers out there.
I like baking.
Yeah.
I do. I bake pies. I mean, I'm very limited, but
I will say I am very impressed that you actually did do something in terms of cooking when we had our cooking challenge. That was nice.
Oh, because Shazat there is like, all right, Buttercup.
She's like, all right, Buttercup, get to it.
And if she didn't force me to start working, I would have started just making drinks and kind of sat in the corner.
Yeah, and you like flit around and you visit everybody and you're
it's my social
Madam
time.
Butterfly, social butterfly.
I'm a social butterfly.
My original plan was to not put you with anybody and just let you float around. And
oh, that's.
And
no,
I would not have
Amy
it.
Goes like this.
I was like,
no, Jer.
No, that's just rewarding bad behavior.
Yeah, don't reward good.
Into this.
Don't reward bad behavior.
Do not.
I thought you were going to put me alone. Like I had one task.
That's a good one.
That's next year.
Well, that's a bad move because no one will eat anything. And I like J-Bone's suggestion is we don't do a group cooking next time. Sloan, you were talking about you're going to handle it yourself kind of.
Well, you were talking to me about that. And then Kelsey and I discussed a little bit. And so we can like come up with a hybrid model or something like that, you know, whatever everyone wants to do. Yeah.
Yeah. It's such a great dinner. It's so much fun, but you got to be part of it too. And you're working your ass off. All right.
Okay. Baking quiz.
Yeah.
Question one, a paste, quote unquote, famous for making eclairs is spelled C H O U X. How is it pronounced? Is it chew, chooks, or shoe?
Okay.
All right. Question two.
Good one.
Many people don't know that bagels are boiled before they're baked. What is the purpose of this? Is it to create crust texture, to assist in leavening, or to control yeast growth?
Oh, that's a toughie.
I went to a bagel shop. This is why I was doing stuff for that show, It's Your Business on MSNBC. We had to rescue a bagel shop and they showed us the boiling process. And I can't remember now why. There's guys that are bagel rollers. That's all they do.
I have a friend named Phil who goes from Mountain Lakes Bagels to whatever.
Oh, he rolls the Mountain Lakes Bagels?
And he rolls the bagels.
So
he's got forearms like
massive
tanks.
Popeye forearms. These guys, their forearms are massive.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is they go to your point, they go to multiple bagel shops. So the bagel rolling process is a secret that's passed down. It's not even supposedly, you're trained as an apprentice, but no bagel shop is given. So these rollers go to different shops rotating around.
It's crazy. When he told me that was his job, I was like, wait, are you?
Is he Jewish?
Nope.
Oh, because a lot of these guys are Jewish.
Yeah, this guy's not.
When I was working in the industry for a long time, I built up these calluses and my hands were like rocks. Like I couldn't cut myself and all that stuff. But I worked with a pastry chef who could basically pull sheet pans out of the oven with his bare hands because they were so rough.
Calloused.
Yeah. Like he had built up a tolerance to heat and everything. It was insane.
My God.
I've never seen that before. Okay. Question three. Little switcheroo here.
Like how Kelsey will say nothing now. She's so embarrassed from her hair fixing episode.
She's so not.
The best-selling cookie of the 20th century was which brand? Was it A, Oreo, B, Chips Ahoy, or C, Keebler?
Wait, ask the question one more time for me, Jer. I'm sorry.
The best-selling cookie of the 20th century was which brand?
Is this a trick question?
No.
Because Amy's like, I know, I only eat Oreos all day long. I alone carry them.
That's right.
Oh, we need more Clif Bars at the office.
I know. I'm going to go get snacks this week. I promise.
I don't like those other things. Like those, I don't know if it's not kind. It's something, they're too sweet.
Which ones don't you like? The kind. Because I get tons of kind.
It has, I don't know what it is. There's like two or three left. Like no one apparently likes them. They're a peanut butter or something. It seems very appealing.
Those are kind. Those are kind, but there's different kinds of kinds. There's all kinds of kinds. I have like six kinds. I won't get those for you. But somebody.
Hide them away from me.
Okay.
Do you know my favorite? Power Crunch. They have like that wafer.
Oh, yeah. They have a wafer cookie now that's not a Power Crunch one. So, and those are darn good. Darn good.
I wish Twix candy bars were healthy for you.
Who brought the paydays in and made me go crazy?
That was me.
Why were there so many paydays in the office? Oh my gosh. Was that from the photo
shoot?
We
used them at ProfitCon or something. We just had to get rid of them.
Are they still there?
I ate them all. No, they're not still there.
I ate all of them?
I forget how much I love paydays.
But I ate a good amount of them.
How many did you eat?
At least four. Oh. At least four.
In one day? Please, no. One day.
No. Oh.
All right.
Two.
That was like a mic exaggeration. I ate all of them.
I ate all. Well,
I had two.
No. Yeah, she did do
two at one time.
Did it, ME, mic exaggeration. All right.
Okay. Answers to the baking quiz.
Yes.
Question one. The paste that forms that makes eclairs is spelled C-H-O-U-X. How is it pronounced?
I say shoe.
Shoe.
It is shoe. No. Yes.
Yes.
Shoe.
Mike said shoe.
I said shoe.
You said shoe, right?
I said shoe. I know that I have it written down as the word shoe.
Shoe.
I can't see.
Can't see a thing. It's all glare.
Just blurted out, but it says shoe.
Okay. There it is.
But here, bonus, do you know what the full name's called?
Big Chew.
Chewin.
Big League Chew.
No, seriously, none of you know?
No. Creme Chew.
Pat-a-shoe.
Pat-a-shoe.
Chew paste. Yep.
Pat-a-shoe.
All right, question two. Bagels are boiled before they are baked. What is the purpose of this?
A for the crust.
I don't know if it's the crust or to assist in the leavening.
It does help yeast with growth. The leavening.
Oh,
yeast growth.
I'm going to say assist in leavening.
All right. So you each have a different answer.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
This is juicy. So, Mike, you have the most experience in this, right?
I do.
And you're wrong. You're completely wrong. The fact that you said it doesn't assist in texture is the opposite. It actually does create the crust.
Bullshit.
Good job, Kelsey. Good
Thank
job.
I have the really most experience.
Yeah. And I said the polar opposite and lambasted Kelsey for saying such a ridiculous comment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I do stand by the ridiculousness of Kelsey saying it, though.
Actually, the fact is, the longer you boil them for, the tougher and thicker that crust will become.
Yeah. That's why I always know the places that have the boiled, because I feel like they have that better combination of soft middle with the crusty outside.
Yeah.
Because some people don't boil them nowadays.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's just not even, that's just bread. That's not a bagel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't like bready bagels. Don't give me a bready bagel.
Thank you. Me just neither.
Stop it, right, Mike? Just stop it.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Stop it, Kelsey. There's a little mini hand for our podcast listeners. I'm waving in the camera. Just stop it, Kelsey. Stop it.
Kelsey's uber young hands, when she puts them up to her face, are freaking me out because there's no like skin tone change.
There's no normal skin.
No, it is normal skin. It's just very youthful, and it's just bizarre compared to.
It looks like wood. Her hand looks like wood.
Oh, yes, like God. That. There's like no. There's.
And
no
look at her weird. Look at her. Yeah. Look at her touching her face. See how gross that is. It doesn't, I'm telling you, that is wood. That's an artificial limb.
It does look like an artificial limb the way she has it like that.
It's like in Happy Gilmore. Remember the like instructor teacher guy, he gets his hand eaten by the alligator. Yes. And then he has that like wooden hand and he's like,
Chubbs.
Kelsey, it is amazing how much that looks fake, right?
It looks so fake. Got the grip down perfectly.
Yeah.
But our hands all look normal.
Our hands
are gnarled.
Gnarled. We are gnarled old people, Michael.
I think mine are looking a little blue because I'm cold.
How are you guys talking about
like
this?
Winter
we're talking about a baking quiz.
Cookies. Yeah, we're on cookies now.
Come on, Jer. We're getting to my cookies. Let's go.
I was getting to the good cooking tip for those that
are. I feel like I should mention, though, at one point, Jeremy said, I think it was on a retreat last year, out of nowhere, he was like, you have really nice fingers. I was watching you talk and I really nice fingers.
To who? To you?
Creepy, Jer. Creepy.
Jeremy said to you, Kelsey?
Jeremy said it to Kelsey.
I always give Kelsey random compliments.
Do you remember that? I'm not making it up, right?
I've never heard someone compliments my fingers. You do remember that, Jeremy?
Yeah, her hands. She has nice hands. Very, very like feminine.
Delicate, artificial. Feminine.
I'm not impressed. I'm not impressed.
Clearly. There's no skin. There's something wrong with your skin.
There's something wrong. I'm trying to help you.
When I give her these random compliments, I never think, hey, I'm going to be weird about this.
I'm just naturally good at it.
No, and I'm just like, I think like, hey, maybe you should appreciate, you know, maybe no one's
I do. Part. It's such a nice
It is nice to hear. It
and
is nice to hear
you say that, but I feel like secretly you get
especially when Mike tears him down.
I'm not tearing him down. I'm just saying there's something wrong. It's a health concern I have for your skin.
Oh, geez. All right. Anyway, the bagel tip.
Sorry.
For those of you that are going to make your own bagels, 30 to 60 seconds boil per side. Okay. If you go longer, you'll get a chewier crust, but then the bagel itself won't. It'll be like a denser interior. So it's like a fine line you have to walk there with that.
Excuse me. Per side. How do you dunk a bagel in a pot of water and boil it and only do it per side?
Because they float. So put them in the water and it floats.
They
on
float. That's all it. News to me. Okay. All right. Thank you for that.
Got it. Okay. Question three. Best-selling cookie of the 20th century was which brand?
Keebler.
They say cuber because they have longevity. It's like over the whole century, right? Weren't they earlier?
They sell the worst cookie.
I'm going with Oreo just to be different.
I knew you would.
And I want Oreos really badly right now.
Yeah. It is Oreo. It is Oreo.
Amy.
Oreo.
Look at this.
Remember that scene in Jaws where they cut open the shark and it comes, they pull out like the license plate and stuff?
Yeah.
We could just cut open Amy's gut. Like all the food answers are revealed there. Wads of Oreo cookies, payday bars. You'll know what the world's consuming.
Uh-huh. I'm just a repository for junk
food. You are. There's probably a license plate in your gut.
Probably. Yeah. I'm get hungry enough.
I got the good stuff. She only has the good stuff in there.
Aw. Thanks. Yeah.
There's no repository of gross things like a shark.
No, I didn't say she had like a baby's foot or something in there.
Nobody said that.
In the news, the number one victim of shark attacks are babies.
In particular, their feet.
Wait, you don't go after the head. Like babies don't go swimming. They're playing next to the water. Mom's like, oh, that's so good. Like shark. Did you watch
Did you just make up that statistic?
I feel like it makes some.
I gave it a little license.
Okay? A little license. Yeah. Little license.
Meanwhile, parents are like, kids, stay out of the water.
They're coming for the babies.
I just figured out I've been doing this hand wrong. I've been putting the wrong side in. I thought it was for more flexibility. It's supposed to be this side, just so you all know. So that's interesting.
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make it my goal in the next 5 years to write a book. And it's just going to be completely fabricated nonsense.
Yeah.
And then when I get called out on it, I'll be like, it was just some Michalowicz.
Poetic license. Poetic license.
You know? Like,
it was a fiction nonfiction. Yeah. Oh, did Amy win again?
Confab.
I won. I did.
Amy's won twice.
How many did you get right? Two?
Two.
Two. I got two, too.
Oh, we tied. I didn't win. We tied.
Oh, shoot. Should I ask another question?
Yeah, yes. You got a tiebreaker? Yeah.
Yes.
I do not, but I can come up with
one. Yeah, you can do this quickly. Got this.
So let me think here. Baking.
Oh, Jesus.
This isn't going well.
Come on, Mike. Not oh, Jesus. Well, God.
Jesus, Mary, and Joseph.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay. What will make a cake denser? Is it eggs, sugar, or flour?
Oh, not what I was thinking. None of those were what I was thinking. So,
a denser cake. That's between you two, Amy and Kels. I'm out.
I'm saying
tiebreaker.
I'm saying eggs.
I said eggs too.
It's flour.
So, how does that help? Because we're no.
Oh, come on. Now I got to do another one.
Oh, no. Yeah.
No. I think eggs does make it like fluffier. But my original thought was oil. I feel like when you make pancakes, the more oil you add, the like denser. Or brownies.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think oil and brownies.
It's different for brownies. But a big factor is same thing with the tempura batter. What kind of flour are you using and how much you're mixing it? Because the more you mix it, the more gluten gets activated. And then it kind of changes a little bit.
Well, Minnie was a baker, and now no one listening will ever be a baker because we got so messed up. Hey, do us a favor, my listening friend. Go to rateourpodcast.com and go to mikesyoutube.com to check out our YouTube video series. And thanks for being a fan. We'll see you on the next episode. Wishing you good times.
Wishing you good times.
Bye.